We, Marianne and I met Jim through Karen Masullo, who used to work for us and now works for Jim. And Karen told me this story about Jim's company. They get involved with crisis management and crisis prevention. And one of their clients is a private school. And one of the services that Jim's company does is they actually monitor the social media of all the students. And one of the students said he was planning to bring a weapon to school. So the question then becomes, how are we going to deal with this? If we bring in the police and search the student or open the locker and there's no weapon, we'll be embarrassed and the parents are going to be very angry. If we tell all the students to leave the premise, we're going to create a crisis. And so what they did was they created a and they were going to do an exercise where they were randomly going to inspect just random students' lockers. And just randomly, the targeted student was one of those selected, and I believe they did find a weapon. I think that's just really cool in terms of what they do and how they do it. The topic today is cybersecurity, and it's one of two programs we are going to be having a seat at the table on this. Today, this is going to be much more of a hands-on, and then the next month, we're going to be having somebody from a big four CPA firm who's written a book on cybersecurity. Speaking of book, Jim has written a book called Disaster Ready: People for a Disaster Ready America. It's really about what you can do as an individual with your family in terms of risk management. So I'll leave this here. Jim is the co-founder of Firestorm, and his home is in the Atlanta area, but they have offices around the country. Firestorm focuses on crisis management, threat assessment, disaster preparedness, and business continuity planning. He has extensive experience in the identification and quantification of risks. He's led to the development of national standards for risk management, environmental risk, and environmental due diligence. Jim led the Firestorm team in providing crisis management and media support at Virginia Tech in response to the shootings, which was the largest workplace violence in the history of the United States. Jim also led the crisis management team at a state university that was suffering from cannibalism. And I bet you never read about it in the papers. And the fact that you didn't read about it in the papers was due to Jim. Jim has an MS in management and engineering from the Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks, it's good to be here. Thank you all for coming today. And it's nice to be around all the experts. And so what we're going to have today is a board, and we were very smart in our board. We hired a lot of intelligent people to sit in the chairs around the table. And we're going to talk about cyber breach today and what's involved. We certainly at Firestorm get involved with companies in the middle of a crisis, like your career has been and what you've dealt with. We would much prefer to arrive where we are today before a crisis. Our focus is on consequence management when we become involved in each of these areas. We have seen cyber breach become a particular driver across organizations, whether they're nonprofits, whether they're for-profits, financial institutions. We just finished doing a cyber breach response program for a company in the financial services space that their clients represent one-third of the businesses in the United States of America. So a breach to them has an impact on the economy in the United States of significant proportions. What I would like to share with you is a couple of thoughts before we get into the exercise, just to frame it. We're in an environment today where 80% of corporate assets are information. When you think about that, that's a radical change. I'm old and decrepit and have gray hair from my experience when I entered the business world of where the corporate assets are. And if you remember the story that may be apocryphal about the bank robber that was interviewed in the 1920s or 30s, why do you rob banks? And his answer was, well, that's where the money is. So why are people after the information? That's where the money is. I will also tell you that when we talk about a cyber breach, it's not an IT problem, it's a business problem. And that's the reason why I think it's very appropriate that you're going to take two sessions to talk about the board member's role here. And as you think about your role with nose in and hands out, this will be certainly a factor to what kind of questions that you would want to ask, what it is that you want to know. I will share with you that in any crisis, almost everything you find out initially is wrong. Now you have to make a decision. And you have to make a decision on wrong information. And by the way, the choices are very clear. Here's a bad choice. Here's a bad choice. Which one do you want to do? It's not, here's a good choice and here's a bad one. My grandfather used to have a phrase, which would you rather have, or a whipping? And I think, gee, Granddad, I think I can figure this one out. I'll go for the other one. So you're going to be impacted on a bunch of different levels. Some of the attributes I want you to remember is this is a criminal act. If you use a term like hacker, you make it sound like, well, it's, you know, the kids doing that. It's a criminal act. And I think that's an important aspect to keep in mind, but there's a major difference here. This is a criminal act that you then can be held accountable for. Somebody else committed a criminal act on you, and now you bear the liability and the brunt of that particular episode. That's very unusual in this area. When we think about crisis, and we think about it across every area, there are a couple of landmark cases that drive liability, and I'm not an attorney, so I'm an engineer, and you can correct me easily as we go through the process. One was the 1993 bombing at the World Trade Center. That was the truck bomb down in the garage below the building. And they caught the terrorist, found him guilty in a criminal trial, but there was a civil trial. And there was a lot of attention to that. In the civil trial, the jury awarded damages as follows. 2/3 of the liability to the building owner, 1/3 of... You want that moved someplace?
Yeah, there you go.
Right. This happens to be the Port Authority of New Jersey.
That's correct. And so they got 2/3 of the liability, and the terrorists got 1/3. And great country, America, how can that be? And the rationale was this was an identified vulnerability, this was an identified hazard, and they had an obligation to protect the tenants and the public. Fast forward it. A few weeks ago, did you follow the story about the reporter for ESPN who stayed in the hotel and had the stalker who was able to figure out what room and got set up and took the pictures and put them out on the internet? And there was a $75 million lawsuit. It was settled for $55 million. It'll probably get adjusted down through the courts as those things happen, but the jury awarded damages, 49% of the liability to the hotel, 51% of the liability to the stalker. So when we're looking at information and assets, if I do business with your firm, if I am involved with your organization, you've got a liability from back to me to protect me at this point in time. Now, if you have a tornado that hits one of your locations, if you have a flood, if you have a fire, insurance is going to take care of that. But if you look at this, this is the one of the few problems that has the potential to take an organization off the table literally overnight. And getting that brand and reputation back will be very hard. Imagine a financial institution who has this kind of a problem. Would you want to put your money and assets in it? And the answer is no, I wouldn't. I'd want to go somewhere else and to look in each of those areas. So we'll come back and deal with those aspects as we go through the exercise in just a few moments. The other thing I want to stress is that this is going to come as an absolute surprise. And I will share with you that the last time a surprise was good, I was 5 years old and it was my birthday. If you're at work, if you're sitting on the board and there's a surprise for the board, it's not like, wow, we just uncovered another X percentage of revenue and profit that's coming in. It's going to be the other way. We got a call yesterday from an association who has been breached, and they've just sent a notice out to everybody involved in it, and this reaches a long, long way. And the CEO said, well, this was a black swan. He was exactly wrong. It was not a black swan. This is an event that was 100% predictable and should have been counted on. And you're right in every board you sit on to ask, what is your plan associated with it? So we gave the example about predicting about a gun going to school. And one of the things to be aware of today, that there are indicators for almost everything. In some cases, they're derivative. Weather's easy. We can look at a weather report. And if you live in the Atlanta area, you listen to the weather report and know it's going to be something else. So you can rule that one out because their accuracy rate isn't that high. But in this area, you've got to start to look and say, what are the indicators? What are the awareness points that we should be monitoring? In addition to all of our scientific forensic tools and analysis, and those are very helpful. So the first thing that an organization needs to do is to identify their information assets, and that's hardware, it's network infrastructure, software, electronic, physical data, human knowledge. Don't forget about what's between the ears of the people that are associated with it, the reputation, the financial, whatever your operating expectations are. All of those are information assets, and I would attack those for a variety of different reasons. And that's a beginning point to start to build it and make sure that awareness is put out. Once you identify that, you would say, well, why would somebody want this asset? Then what's an indicator that that's about to happen? What's a warning sign or a scenario that it would come into play? And as we go for the exercise today, I want you to think about those. We follow a predict, plan, perform methodology. Predict what the vulnerabilities and threats are, what are their impacts, how do you monitor them, and what would be the trigger? How bad does it have to get before you spring into action? Our plans cover a wide variety. We were talking today about cyber breach, but it could be a business continuity program or a crisis management, communicable illness. We did the communicable illness for one of the largest retailers in the United States history. By the way, we refer to it as communicable illness instead of pandemic because many people don't believe in a pandemic, but they do believe that there are diseases that can be communicated. Workplace violence, and since the San Bernardino shootings, that's become a major driver in the business marketplace to be concerned about that. We have a program that called Behavioral Risk Threat Assessment, and our goal here is to identify the gun before it comes to school or before it comes to work. And we can share a lot of stories about that at another time. Now, if today's exercise is helpful and you would want to have your organizations or others that you know to participate in something similar, every 2 months we do a virtual exercise and make it available. It's our way to get awareness of what's going on, and it's a self-discovery sales strategy. It's free. By the way, that's our best price. We rarely pay people to take our advice. And in December, we ran a cyber breach exercise. We had 980 companies participate, many of them globally. We had half of the Fortune 500 that go through it. And it's a two-hour event where we create a scenario, and then they have their team sit around the table, work on the problem, share those results back, and we have experts to share with that. And I have a small handout for you from that exercise that we did that talks about here are 10 cyber actions that you can take now, and we'll make that available. And for the people that are listening on the pod, if they want to do that, contact back to Larry. We, in February, ran another exercise. This time we took workplace violence. We had 1,050 companies. This was post San Bernardino that sat through it in 500 schools. Next month in April, we're going to do a cyber exercise, not the one we're doing today. So if you want another bite at the apple, you can take it then. And it'll be at the toward the end of April. It's on our website, and I couldn't get the date back to Larry. And then we're doing one early in April for schools, and it's going to be on sexting and cyberbullying. And so that's their version of what this is and why it would be concerned. I would encourage you to find out what your cyber breach indicators are in your organizations. Ask them what they're thinking about and looking at. Slow computers are an obvious one. Systems not operating as they normally would. There would be unusual requests. Creating a cyber breach activation matrix. If this happens, who's responsible? What's the level? What are you going to do and implement associated with it? And what we look is at a five-stage program: pre-action, onset, impact assessment, response and recovery, and then finally post. The hot wash after an event is extremely critical. What did you learn? This is a continuous improvement process to move forward. By the way, there will be communications that are involved, and One of the things that we take a contrarian view, in fact, we work with schools and businesses to have a transparency and communications commitment that they're going to communicate directly with their stakeholders. They're not going to communicate with their stakeholders through the media. And that's an important differential here. Because if I turned and went to George and said, George, could you tell Larry this? That doesn't make any sense. I should be able to turn to Larry and tell Larry what I want him to know. The media has a conflict bias, and so they're going to try to look and leverage this thing to last in the news. So they're in the entertainment business. They're in the reality TV business today, and that's a big difference. In this type of a crisis, like any other, there are three kinds of communications. Coordination is your first. What are you doing internally and externally, and you're communicating directly to get the troops started and responding and moving appropriately. The second kind of communications is around the crisis itself, the brand and the reputation. And the last is the compliance communications, because legally we're required to put out certain communications. Now, my background is out of the insurance and reinsurance industry. I was president, CEO of an insurance company, EVP and chief operating officer of a public insurance group, and you kind of love insurance. If you want to design the worst distribution model in the world, you look at the insurance industry. It's regulated in every state differently. You've got lots of different rules, and you've got agents and brokers and wholesalers and MGAs and insurance companies and intermediaries and reinsurers, and everybody wants a commission. And so you just try to take a look at that. But the environment in information is it's regulated on a 50-state basis. So what's a breach in from an personally identifiable information in one state is different in another, and so it means your notifications are different. So it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. So it's complex, and that leads us to why you have a seat on the board today. So we're going to start with an exercise, and I'm going to, as in any exercise, you want to know what's the objective and what you're trying to test, and we're looking at the decision process and the communications, and that's what we want to focus on today. So I'm going to read some of the background on this, and then we'll get started. And if you've done tabletop exercises before, you give a little bit and you stop and say, what do you know? What are you concerned about? What are you going to do? What are you going to monitor? What are you going to say? Everybody comfortable? By the way, there was no one hurt in this exercise, so this is not a violent one to go. If you look at this, last year was a great year for our company, and thanks for being on the board. You've done a wonderful job for us. At the end of the year, it's budgeting time within the organization, and we're looking at trying to lay out what we're going to do this year. And so part of that is to looking at our financials and our planning. In fact, as you remember in our earlier board meetings, that was one of our objectives, to get a better handle on the numbers and the budgeting and the finance of it. So our accounting department has gone out gave every department head a spreadsheet with a thumb drive, on a thumb drive, that they'd be able to populate and complete that and turn it back in, and that process is going on. Accounting asked each of the departments to put their entire budget and information on those thumb drives and turn them back in. Head of HR has been very busy with the budget and pulling it together from the people side of the company. And in fact, he got his thumb drive in before anybody else. Simultaneously, it's open enrollment under our healthcare program. We've got a new broker involved in it and saved us a ton of money to be dealing with them. And we're very excited about that. And the broker and the new company have been able to get us a better coverage and a hard market. And so we're very pleased with what we've been able to get into place with that. And it's going to eliminate a lot of the need in the HR department, because all of our employees will be able to go directly on the insurance companies and the broker's sites, entering their information, processing their claims, and getting everything handled. So it's going to eliminate a lot of internal friction and delay that we've had. We feel very safe, since there's a dual authentication process with a 6-digit alphanumeric code and a 10-digit complex password. So that's kind of where we are today. But what I really want to talk with you about is something that happened this week. The HR uploaded all the eligible information into the brokerage system as an encrypted spreadsheet. He logged into the portal for the broker and the other, entered his 10-digit code, and selects email me the authorization code, and the upload went very smoothly. However, around 11 o'clock, the help desk started to experience that the system was very sluggish. And at 4:15, we got a disturbing call from our bank. That finance received a courtesy call and it said that the bank had detected and stopped a fraudulent wire transfer to Eastern Europe. And by the way, the bank thanked us for being a very good customer of Big Banco. So that's the first update. What do you think? Concerned about anything? Everything sound okay? Yes, sir.
Why would somebody use email for the 10-digit access code?
Good point. Why would they?
That's what the telephone is for.
Keep, what else? Anything else that bothers anyone out of what you've heard today?
Thumb drives.
Thumb drive.
For the budgets.
And what's been your experience with thumb drives?
Lose them.
Say again?
Lose them.
We worked with a company that went to a big box retailer and brought 100 thumb drives. And out of the 100 thumb drives, 100 had malicious software installed on them in the package that the retailer sold. So just a small error percentage associated. Any other concerns out of what you've been hearing? Yes?
When you selected the new broker, the protocol for the communication back and forth on certain sensitive information, is that ever vetted?
PHI.
Yep, and identifying that is a critical element and the vesting embedding of it. So we find in any disaster or crisis that there are five common failures, and by the way, they're equally true in a cyber breach. The largest single failure in a disaster or crisis is supply chain failure. You see more events break down. Today we only own 10 or 15% of our supply chain, so you've got an 85% dependency on third party. And if most of the breaches that you're familiar with in the news started from a supply chain, heating and air conditioning vendor at Target, the scale vendors and other retailers, there's any number of points. The second greatest failure is the failure to train employees for work and at home. That's the reason why we wrote the little book about having a plan at home, because family trumps job. But most of the breaches that you're familiar with were picnic. Is everybody familiar with the term picnic? Picnic, problem in chair, not in computer. And so it's the person who clicks on that link, who downloads that video of the cat playing up the skirt, the going to that site, and then those things create the problem. So picnic is the biggest single exposure you have for cyber breach. Yes, we need firewalls. Yes, we need forensics. But your problem is the person sitting in that chair, what they're going to do and what they're going to click on. Is exposure. So awareness training. What is my organization doing to make sure everybody is aware? Verizon went into Target last summer. That was after the big breach. And within 1 week, they were able to obtain 83% of the passwords within Target. In 1 week. What can happen within your organization? The third failure is failure to test and update plans. If you don't test your plan, you don't know that it's going to work, and keeping it updated. When BP had the spill in the Gulf, they went to activate their crisis management plan, and the person that was in charge of the crisis committee had been dead for 5 years. So unless you're planning to hire a psychic to sit on your crisis team, you may have a void associated with it. And their plan was the plan from the Northwest changed to the Gulf, and their plan worked perfectly because their plan was designed to protect all the walruses in the Gulf. And I'm proud to tell you that not a single walrus died in the Gulf. The fact that there were none there to begin with was purely irrelevant. The last is the failure to have a crisis communications plan. If you don't have a crisis communications plan, because all of these things are going to happen. If we're saying 80% of our assets are in the information area and we see company after company and government entity after government entity that's done, what are you going to say? And planning it out into coordination, crisis, and compliance would work there. So at this point, if we had a little meter up here reading little concerned, moderately concerned, high concerned, where are you for our company right now?
12.
So I got it out of my three and got it up to a number. That's good. You've been through a lot of exercises and thinking about that. Do you think it's going to get better or worse?
Worse before it gets better.
Yeah, and being perverted is certainly a requirement in the crisis management side of the table. So here's what we see on the next day. Comments appear on Twitter and Facebook as being posted by you. This is a board member made this posting. Insurance rates are getting ridiculous. Thank God we can just pass them on to the employees while protecting our executives. Damn those insurance companies. Later to that day, we had data requests from the brokerage group regarding bank drafting instructions for premium payments due to forward the request to accounting, who then sends routing in an email, including operating account numbers, back to the broker. Later in the afternoon, we got HR received a confirmation file from the brokerage group with all the employee data, but when they did a further review, it wasn't our employees, it was someone else's. And finally, at 4:30, we got a call from them, an email saying our portal is experiencing problems and all our systems, including our voiceover IP, are down. Thank you for your patience, Bob. Where are we, guys?
Deep doo-doo.
That's a, I like the, this is a new Supreme Court judge. This is a legal opinion that's just been granted from that. I think technically the deep doo-doo button should be pushed at this point. Are you concerned now? What do you think's going on?
The enemy's behind the wall.
On average, when they're discovered, the criminals have been inside your business for 240 days.
Wow.
So think about it. If I had 240 days inside your company before I did something, think I'd know where I wanted to go and what I wanted to look for and what I wanted to have happen? By the way, the reach that we were responding to yesterday, they go, well, you know, this happened last week. No, it didn't happen last week. Yes.
Wasn't on your list of five, and I agree, that's probably close to number one. How'd we miss that in our prime concern listing?
Yep. Any other thoughts? What should we be telling management they need to do right now? Go ahead.
Shut up.
Very good rule.
Coordinate. There needs to be a single point of contact and communication. First, we need to know, we have all of the anecdotal evidence. What does, if we have any, what are our actual security threat assessments? What are they telling us? What do we know? What do we not know? Before anyone says anything on social media or calls their wife or her husband says, I'm going to be late and here's why.
Everybody's familiar with the pizzas in the Pentagon? If you're a reporter and you think something's going on, if they're sipping pizzas into the Pentagon, there's something going on. And so not making that dinner party, not doing the other thing is an indicator, and that's been hit many, many times. Every crisis needs a general, and I think that's what you said associated here. But this isn't an IT general. This is a business general, because this is a business impact. Do we feel this company's been breached? I think we got more than enough reason to believe that that's the case. Now, what is the one group that we're not going to talk to?
The media.
Exactly. And every time that we go into a company, some board member says, we got to get out in front of this thing and we got to frame this discussion. And that's exactly the wrong strategy. So if you want to take a simple rule back to, and a question to ask management, it's three letters long. Anytime they say they want to communicate, you say, why? And they give you an answer. And then you say, why? And they give you an answer. Then you say, why? And they give you an answer. You do that five times. At the end of asking that question five times, if they've convinced you, you should do that communication. If they haven't, that communication should not go out, because that's going to make this problem significantly worse as we're going together. What are you going to monitor at this point? We haven't talked about monitoring. What are you going to be looking for at this point then?
Social media.
Social media. What are you looking for?
Chatter.
Monitoring your bank accounts.
Yeah.
For that.
You don't need to monitor them now. It's probably already gone. So it's, you know, to be safe, they'll say that. You remember a movie with Richard Pryor in it a number of years ago, and they had a problem in the company, and there was a fraud transaction, and they were trying to figure out who did it, and then he comes in a new Ferrari driving around in the parking lot. So looking at what's going on around you is another element to carry that forward. How many of you sit on boards where they have a formal external intelligence plan in place in a system?
So part of, contact risk management and ask if they have a cyber insurance policy.
Well, okay, that's a cyber insurance policy, and the rates are down. By the way, this is not like buying an automobile policy. An automobile policy, it's going to give you this much coverage, and it's going to get your car fixed, and it's a dog-ball and straightforward. You can go to the same insurance company, and they have 20 versions of the policy. And if you have not done a scenario and had your broker give you in writing a letter saying that scenario would have been covered, we took a scenario that we ran for a company, gave it to the broker to analyze, and of the 8 escalations that occurred, 6 would not have been covered by the insurance. So this is an area that you need to do an analysis. But when I talk about an intelligence network, I'm talking about a formal way to monitor for all the threats and risks that you've identified. If we've identified the information assets and their warning signs, you can design an intelligence program to track those things to see if they're occurring. Now, a general rule is if someone has ill intent, 80% of the time, somebody else knows. And if 67% of the time, two or more people know. And that's applying to things like workplace violence, but it also applies to these types of areas. We've uncovered product recall issues because people are on social media complaining about the product. It's not what I thought it was. I'm having these problems. And every time someone says, well, our product would never do that, rest assured that's exactly what their product did and looking at it. So having an external intelligence network feeding you the intel coming in. Now what they're going to do is to give you information, but information plus insight is equal to intelligence. And so you should be asking, what is our threat intelligence program associated with it? Right now, if you're a financial institution or in the financial services place, the federal government is having requirements that you have a documented threat intelligence program. So you need to look at that and think about that, and that's different to see that we've had a distributed denial of service attack going on. Yes, you need that, but we need to look at all the other cues. Let's do another escalation and just for fun to see how much good this our company is having today. 7:30 in the morning, while driving in to work that day, you listen to the radio and it announces that there have been breaches of some local schools and businesses. You learn that Brian Krebs has called the CEO and informed him that our organization employees' earnings and information is on the dark web. Obviously, we're not overly happy about that. At 8 o'clock, accounting looks at their online accounts and realizes that the operating account has suffered a major fraudulent transfer. Bank informs accounting that all proper passwords were used and funds were sent as ACH, so there is no recovery possible. At 8:15, social media posts are going wild with negative remarks regarding your organization related to personal PHI and PII information of our employees. At noon, HR learns that several employees have found their insurance coverage denied at provider appointments. One such report involves massive delay and confusion at a local trauma center. And security, legal, and IT are going to be working through the night trying to figure out what's going on. Does everybody know who Brian Krebs is? Has anybody ever heard of Brian Krebs? If you were looking, okay, who's a shock jock? Give me a shock jock.
Howard Stern.
Howard Stern. Everybody here heard of Howard Stern? Take Howard Stern and put him in cybersecurity. That's Brian Krebs. He contacts companies regularly to say, I'm sitting here looking at your information on the dark web. And companies are going, no, you're not. And he's going, well, let me read you these lines of it. He's a reporter, and he is a rock star in the information security business. So if Brian Krebs picks up the phone and calls your company, it's not Santa Claus that's coming. It's somebody else that's going to be associated with it. So that's the reason why you need to be aware of what the areas are going. Also, monitoring what's going on in your industry. If others in your space are having a problem and you're the only one who isn't, it's not that you're that much smarter than everybody else, it's just that you don't know it. And that's the area to look at, and to look at the intelligence associated with it. Is this a good day at the company? If we're public, and we went public last year, as I remember, our stock's going really well today, correct? What should we be asking management that they're doing? What question should we ask management today? I don't think we're going to be talking to management, huh?
How did we get to this point?
That's too bad. We're here, so that's the after the fact. It's what have we been able to identify the risks? Have we validated them, and have we been able to at least do an assessment on the legitimacy, you know, what areas of information have been packed in? This is the Armageddon scenario. It's not only financial information, it's PHI, it's PII, it's...
Okay, which is worth more, PHI or PII?
Depends on who the crook is.
PHI is generally more valuable than PII.
Can you personal define health what information. PHI
is? Personal health information. Because then I can file claims on your behalf. You can find out that you've all had a new facelift that's just occurred. Find out other things that are starting to happen. It brings a higher dollar value on the dark web associated with it. And so those two elements together, plus if these people have been involved, think they shorted the stock? We dealt with a board where information was flowing out of the board. Never a good scenario associated with it. Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, on PHI, the liability is even higher.
You are 100% correct. And depending upon exactly what's happening where and who is involved, some of these carry the potential for legal liability and criminal liability. And that means you get a new bracelet, but they join with the other bracelet. It's very nice. But you get to wear your hands behind your back in that particular area. So, yes.
Let me ask different board contexts. In a typical public company, you may have 5 to 7 board members. And I could see putting those 5 to 7 board members in a room, explain the situation, and then doing some scenario planning. Harvard University, on the other hand, I don't know how many people on the board, 23, 25? Partners, Mass General, many of the big nonprofits that we have in Boston, 25 people on a board is not uncommon. You can't have 25 people
making
involved. So what do? You limit it to the executive committee or the audit committee? Or
I would ask, let's first pull out what our company cyber breach response plan is. Then defines the role of the board. How many of you reviewed their cyber breach response plan in your organization defining your role in a cyber breach? And for those of you who are listening on the recording, it's very quiet in the room right now. Now, I just told you about an association who this week sent a notice out to everybody that was involved with it. They had a, quote, black swan, a cyber breach. Everybody understands what a black swan is, correct? It's an event that's so bad, but it's never been seen before. Has anybody ever seen a cyber breach before? Can anybody name an industry that hasn't had a cyber breach in it? So it's not a black swan. Now, if you sit on a board, I believe you're supposed to use business judgment. Is that a reasonable statement, Larry? I'm not an expert, and I'm certainly not an attorney as Mindy is, and looking at those insights. And so in many cases, boards are protected because of the business judgment rule. They use business judgment, and something didn't work out the way they intended, and the directors and officers insurance would kick in and play. By the way, is there an exclusion on your D&O policy for cyber? Does anybody know? If you're on a board, you might want to know that fact. But think
there's
about...
There's two, terrorism and state actors.
Okay, and so if the cyber breach was a state actor, would that void coverage?
Yes.
Okay, and are most of these things coming from state actors? The answer would be yes, for those of you who would like to have a quicker answer associated with it. But the failure to plan, in some cases, can void coverage under the business judgment rule. Failure to plan is a potential liability that goes back, and it could mean then that it's the board member's home, their checking account, their personal net wealth that are now protecting the company. Now, if I was sitting on a board, I kind of think I'd like to know what we got here and what we don't have here. And I would want to have any report that says we're covered in writing from signed by the broker that's involved, because then I now have the broker's E&O covering me in addition to look for that. So this is an issue that you've got to talk about. Yes, public boards are generally smaller, although I've seen some large public boards, as you have too. Harvard has a minor investment endowment. What's the size of the investment endowment at Harvard these days? Not a small number. Would that be a target if I was a hacker or a criminal that I'd like to get into? And when you think about these types of events, in Harvard is the exception to every rule, so now I'm going to let you out of it. In most academic environments, everything is consensus. The faculty all wants to agree. Everybody wants to have a voice. This has to be an open area. We have to be unanimous in all our decisions. And in these types of things, time is of the essence. Speed is quality. We're not going to have a month to sit down and figure out what we're going to say and what we're going to do. The money's flowing out of this company's bank right now. Those employees are being impacted right now. We don't have the option next month, next year to do something. We've got to do it now. And so to ask management, what is your plan? How are you going to monitor it? And the reason you want to monitor it is, remember, most everything you know right now is wrong. You're making these decisions based upon wrong information. So tell me what the intelligence program is that's going to keep us in tune with it, and what we're communicating and who we're communicating that to.
By the way, let me exercise my role as timekeeper. We have 10 minutes. And at 6 o'clock, we'll have a soft stop.
Within an organization, would the CIO be mostly responsible for setting up the plans?
How many of you know the three-envelope rule? Do most of you know the three-envelope rule? The chief information security officer just gets the job at the company, comes in, and so the outgoing CISO gives him three envelopes. He says, well, thanks, why are you doing this? Why are you giving me the envelope? Well, if something happens, you open the envelopes and they're numbered. And so, sure enough, shortly after he arrives, there's a cyber breach. And he goes, he gave me an envelope. Blame previous CIO. You know, that other guy just didn't do what he needed to do. And so they got control, he survived it. He goes to the next one. There's a second breach. I got an envelope. Blame your people. We put these programs in place and they didn't do what I told them to do. By the way, do you know when the majority of the breaches occur? Within 1 week of the updates on software. If you track the updates being announced by major software vendors in the 7 days after that are when the majority of the breaches occur, because everybody's waiting to install the patch to see what the impacts are going to be on their organization. But when the patch is announced, it tells all the criminals, this is where the hole is. And if you can come up with $75 or $500, you can go to China and buy the tool to exploit the patch to go with it. Sure enough, our CISO hits the third breach. And he opens
up. Happened the week before the update?
No, the week as soon as it's announced.
Well, as soon as it's announced, right?
Because
before
companies...
They
wait to see, well, what's the impact on the company to do. And the last envelope says, take out three envelopes. So what happens in a breach is you lose the CIO, the CTO, the CEO, and in many cases the CFO or the COO within it, but always the CEO and always the IT people. By the way, the next guy that comes in's got the same problem that the guy who just got thrown out, or lady who got thrown out. So this is an issue that affects the senior leadership of the organization. Easy to find a new CEO? Do that in a week, 2 weeks? So Larry, you guarantee 24-hour services, I remember. That's the revolving CIO.
And he even provides the three envelopes.
There you go. That's an extra upcharge. You have to pay for that extra to get associated with it. Let me read you the last portion of this so you can see how it comes together, and I'll give you a little bit afterwards. At 2 a.m., all of the systems are shut down, including the voiceover phone system. Systems are finally restored at 3:45 a.m. At 4 a.m., the president receives a ransom note demanding millions in exchange for control, system control, and for the information on what changes were made to employee accounts. At 7 a.m., law enforcement contacts the organizations, as well asking you not to take immediate action while they investigate. The lawyers are calling from the insurance company saying that they traced the breach back to your company. And you get a note, and it looks like this one that says, hang on, you can at least see, I have your data, send money as directed, or else it's all over. You know, these types of events really happen. And you're going, and you'll read about them if you're following this on a regular basis. Most cyber insurance policies cover ransom, yes.
It's even less sophisticated than that. The very common ransomware.
Yep.
The last organization, we had it twice, no matter what protocols we put in place. I hadn't heard it before, but your PICNIC acronym was exactly it. Don't click on this. Okay. And
we dealt with the guy who
opened up the back door.
Well, and once you do, you put the keystroke logger in there, and remember, they're going to be in there for 240 days. They're not doing anything today. It's not like there's a big bang, something happened. It just comes in. It sits there. It looks around and finds out this is where this goes. This is who you have access to it. And then you've got other tricks that start to happen. We find out that the CEO is going to be speaking at RIMS, the Risk and Insurance Management Society, and we know he's going to be out of town. So an email that comes back into the accounts payable people from the CEO saying, by the way, I was at the conference, I saw Frank, we've got a new project we're doing, go on and wire, you know, a quarter of a million over there and we're going to get that done. Wasn't from the CEO, but it looked like it was from the CEO because they were inside the system. And these types of infiltrations, they could copy all the information, park it in some place hidden on the system, and then at the appropriate time, trigger it to download all that information coming out. They're not taking it out one bit at a time. They're bringing in tractor trailer trucks, the equivalent in an information standpoint, and rolling it all out at the same time. 240 days. Imagine if you had a sore on your arm and it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Would you wait 240 days to go and have that looked at? I'm thinking you'd be going and finding a doctor, even if you didn't like them a lot, to say, what is this? What do I do about it? That's what this is. It's malignant, and it's installed, and it will build and find those areas to take advantage of. Could be the ransomware. Now, here's a company that you just explained had it happen to them twice. And the problem, again, was it could have not been cleaned out from the first time. It could have been a second area that goes on. I talked to a guy who was chief purchasing officer for an automotive organization, and he clicked on a link. And he said, well, I know we weren't dealing with them, but I wanted to see what they said. And you find in every time you say that will never happen, I will tell you that's exactly what happens. So training is the solution associated with it. So an after a hot wash is a review of the events. You look at what are the lessons learned? What do we know? What would we do differently? How can we do a better job in putting those areas? Generally, after that's done, after a cyber breach, a hot wash would normally take a day or two to complete. You'd have everybody that's involved in it, you go through a strict timeline. If you have a strong project management person in your organization, I would want them assigned to the team. I'd bring an outside facilitator in because you don't want to have the people that were involved in it leading the discussion. And you want to go through what happened, what did you knew, what occurred then. We uncovered recently in a financial services area where the employee had clicked on it and that let it in. And in turn, they have a trouble ticket process and responding to clients' problems. And they use their CRM, which is a customer relationship management system, to track that. It's a third-party vendor, nationally known system. So the problem goes up there. And it comes back then on the ticket, pushed all through the company, and the company had set up anything coming out of the CRM, you don't have to screen, because that's us. Wrong. And so understanding this, it's not like peeling an onion. Peeling an onion is fairly easy. You've got one layer at a time. You're peeling a bag of onions blindfolded. When you look at those types of things, that's what we're dealing with in these areas. So most problems come back to behaviors of concern. If we're talking about violence, that's just a big portion of what we do, that's certainly, there are indicators, there are warning signs. Somebody who's under personal stress, getting a divorce, has an illness, a death in the family, all of these other strengths, the person who had been good at coming to meetings starts getting erratic attendance, or they become argumentative, all of those things. Similarly, cyber breach, it starts from behaviors of concern. You know, did your folks ever tell you sometime in your life nothing ever good happens after 2 a.m? You know, going to some of these sites, clicking on these things, looking at those types of areas, that's going to do it. And you're not paying attention to see that the address is slightly a letter off. One thing's a little bit different. How many of you have received that you've won a lottery someplace else, or somebody you know is trapped out of the country and needs help to get back, or someone that you just forgot that you were related to has left you, you know, $36 million. And you're saying, well, that's stupid. No one would ever, absolutely they would. And it's not you. Someone in your organization has clicked on that, and that's all it takes. Once they're in, they're in. This is a light switch. The lights in this room are on, or the lights are off. Once I let them in, then they're in control. And that's the area. I think we've hit the top of the hour.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
Many years ago, I recall, General Motors' system did not accept incoming email unless the system recognized the sender, and one had to make an arrangement with the people at General Motors to be able to set that up so that you could communicate with them by email. Do organizations use controls like that today? Are they effective?
Yes. And you're pre-approved, particularly
called whitelisting.
And if you're working on projects and you're an outside vendor, you go through and it's a formal document sharing site where those elements are put into place. And that works effectively, except if you have customers. You know,
occasionally don't want to use it.
Yeah, and so we're a little bitty insignificant firm. If I got a customer who's paying me reasonably good money and they send me an email, I'm probably going to open the email. And so these things happen. I want to give you 5 areas to look at. There is a cyber breach response maturity model. We've worked in this area for a number of years, and anytime you're looking at an organization, I would encourage you to think about what a maturity model looks like in whatever area you're focused on. And when we think about cyber breach, there are 5 dimensions. The first dimension would be risk management and oversight, and underneath that would be governance, risk management, resources, training, and culture. And we look at it at a 4-point scale, moving from a stage 1 where everything's a liability and a surprise, all the way to a stage 4 where it's strategic and part of your culture. The second dimension is threat intelligence and collaboration. Threat intelligence, monitoring and analysis, and information sharing. We have a project going on right now with a very large bank where we're designing a threat intelligence program for them. The third dimension is cyber risk identification, preventive, detective, and corrective. Remember where I talked about all the information assets? What you want to do is to, where is our cyber risk and what would be involved in it? Fourth is the external dependency management, connections and relationship management. Remember the supply chain failure. You probably are going to have a problem as a result of your vendors. And the last is cyber incident management and resilience. Incident resilience planning and strategy, detection, response, and mitigation, escalation, and reporting. So as you look at those 5 dimensions, you can lay out a cyber breach response plan that would be spelled out. I would encourage you also to put in place a cyber breach crisis communications plan with message maps. What are we going to say if our employee information gets out? What are we going to say if the health information gets out? What are we going to say if our financial information gets out? What are we going to do? If the FBI comes up, calls you up and says, don't do anything, should you not do anything?
I'm
If the FBI calls and says, look, we know you've had a problem, we don't want you to do anything, we want to investigate it, is that a requirement or a request?
It's a request.
Depending upon the situation, the majority of the time we decline the request. Now, you probably will have people that will go, we always accept the request. You've got to figure out where you are and what you're looking to do. Now, if it's a fund transfer, having the FBI involved is very helpful because they have assets you don't have, and there's a chance that you may be able to get it back. But once you start to do this, let's talk about a conflict of interest. You have customers. Their information is at risk, and the FBI says, well, don't do anything about it. Are they going to indemnify you from the liability that that creates? And that's why you're on the board. That's what gave you a seat at the table, is you can say, guys, we need to think about this for a minute. Because we go into a lot of companies that says we always work with our local first responders. And we're blessed in America. We have policemen that will run to the gunfire, firemen that will run into the building. But this is a different exposure. This is a different area in planning it out. Would you rather make those decisions today while you're safe in this room? Or would you rather wait till the middle, it's your company and you've got the cyber breach and we're going to try to figure out what we're going to do? And if you're in the last category, I gave a lot of you business cards. We'd be glad to help you with crisis management. For those of you who would like to do something on the other side, I'll give you cards. You can call us ahead of time. And generally it works out cheaper to do it ahead of time than to do it later.
Any questions?
Yes.
Michael.
I'm not quite sure how to articulate the question, but what I'm wondering is the kind of the juxtaposition within a firm of the concern for reputational risk versus the concern for other more direct impact. And what's your experience been with that struggle?
I think that's the board brings a great insight into who we are and what's your mission. One of the first things that we do with an organization is we go on their webpage and look at what's our mission, what are our home bases, what defines us as a business and the direction we're going. And that would frame my answer to your question and where we look. If I was to say the name Harvard, since we have Harvard in the room, what are the words that immediately come to your mind? If you were going to describe Harvard, what words would you pick?
Big.
Big. What else?
Credibility.
What else?
Lots of resources.
Lots of resources. What else?
Rich. Lots of intellectual property.
Right now, I'm going to say Columbine. What words come to your mind?
Shooting.
Okay.
Deranged kid.
Do you know that Columbine is the state flower for Colorado? If you graduated from Columbine High School, went to school and got a PhD at Harvard and went in and did a job interview and they sat down and saw that you went to Columbine, they're not going to ask you about your dissertation. They're going to say, tell me about what happened at Columbine. That's the answer to your question. These events define an organization forever. And if I had a bell up here and I was ringing the bell, I can't unring the bell. If Harvard lost its credibility, if the value of a degree from Harvard went away, and like, you got a degree from Harvard? Yeah, that's not going to happen. But if it did, that's a risk that board cannot take. And so they're going to make every decision in light of that risk, and that will drive it. So go back and look at your mission statement. Look at what defines you, and then come back, and that will guide your decisions in this crisis. Because this is a crisis, yes.
Okay, this is maybe a technical question, but let's say that the scenario you outlined has happened, and so the belief is that somebody is in your system, and they're being in your system, they've maybe taken some materials, databases, they've transferred funds, whatever. Technically, what do you do at that? I mean, do you just unplug from the world? I know that's not what you do, but leave the board aside for a second. What is the technical next steps that you're going
to
take?
We're going to try to go back to an earlier restore point and build back from that. And that'll be very painful. and we're going to have some manual systems in between times and start to put it together, and we're going to try to look and find out where that is and build a wall.
You're saying you'll shut the system, shut all these systems down?
No, he didn't say that.
That's correct. I didn't say that. We didn't say we'd shut it down. I'm saying we're going to have to go back and build a new environment, and then we're going to do a flash cutover.
This is no different than a disaster recovery.
Yeah.
If a meteor falls out of the sky and wipes out your data center, what backup do you have? That's the whole imaging, those valid restore points that you can, one, conduct commerce. If you were the Chicago Board of Exchange and you have this, you can't go off grid. It's those contingency plans then to capture the risk, identify it while you're still at least maintaining some form of operation.
Well, when the World Trade Center came down, a lot of companies did have their computer, their primary computer system was in the World Trade Center. But they all had backup centers in Jersey.
One of the largest risk companies in the entire world kept the backup tapes from Tower 1 and Tower 2.
Right.
And the backup tapes from Tower 2 and Tower 1. That's a single point loss.
Right.
It's like going to Vegas and I'm going to put everything on double zero. You're not going to win a lot. What I want to do is just to leave you with a thought here. And by the way, I get boring very early, and normally most people are asleep well past this time. So I'll wake everybody up to get you out. This area is business continuity planning. It's targeted and it's extremely urgent. It's the tornado. It's the gunman in the store. This is where your whole business continuity program has been invested its entire time, looking in this single quadrant. Now, if you're smart, you said, Jim, there are three other quadrants on that plus diagram that you've listed. What are those? And I want you to start thinking about a different term. And that term is business crisis risk. Cyber breach is a business crisis risk. There are others. But down here in this quadrant, there's something that's difficult. It's targeted, but it's urgent, but it's not as extreme urgency here. It's something that's going on. Maybe something's not quite working the way it needs to be. Maybe we've got some control and process issues here. And if we don't intervene, it becomes chronic. It's here, it's really happening to us, and it's systemic within the organization, and we don't have metrics that we can run it. And then it's complex. It's not one thing. And then we have a severe one up here. It becomes severe. So what happens is the problem moves this direction. Think about the VA. This is a cyber problem for you. We had the Vietnam vets, and we all got old and decrepit, and we got sick. So we needed more treatment. Could the VA handle all those Vietnam vets? They were overloaded.
Right.
So and they didn't say, so we're going to handle them in our hospitals and facilities. We're not going to use outside health care. We're going to try to do it all here internally. It then became chronic. And so we said, okay, we're going to put an incentive system in. If we get everybody seen on within 10 days of the schedule, then they get a bonus check. So what did people do? They created a paper list and didn't enter the person into the computer until it would have been 10 days before the appointment so they could show they had it. And so what happens here is you've got fraud comes into the game. By the way, you never see fraud. You never see a fraud. You see evidence. You see something else, but you don't see the fraud itself. And then it became so bad that you had people dying. It was severe, complex and urgent. Congress gets involved, everything else. And so the VA administration moved through those three blocks. You all sit on boards. And why did you get a board seat? Because they brought you there to help them with business crisis risk. They brought you there to help starting to identify when it gets to be difficult down here, what is it we need to do in our company before it becomes chronic and before it escalates to severe? Where our company plays and Firestorm plays is we help figure that part out. Now, we love the people in the severe area. We get paid up front. Some of you work in turnaround. You get paid up front. You don't go, well, if you turn it around, you can pay me. You're a nice guy, but I don't think you're that nice in looking at it and coming in. This is where we're going. So most companies spend all of this money working on their business continuity problems here. There are three things that you want to think about. You know what you know. Everybody in this room knows something. You sit on a board, there's a bunch of stuff you know. There's a second bucket, you know what you don't know. Well, you know, we don't know about that. We know what's out there, but we're not quite know that. But the big bucket you got to worry about it is what it is you don't know you don't know. That's the biggest bucket that's out there, and you've got to continually define that bucket because that's going to destroy the company. That's why you're asked to have a seat on the board. That's why there's board options. And that's the reason why we came today to talk about cyber. So I'll shut up again.
Well, thank you very much. Excellent. We